The new book of illustrated misspellings will be sure to wake you up if you're vast asleep, and it will raise your self-esteem. In a new book called The African Svelte, Ingenious Misspellings That Make Surprising Sense, Stony Brook professor Daniel Menaker, the former executive editor-in-chief of Random House and a former fiction editor at The New Yorker, explores some unintentionally meaningful spelling errors and their etymology. And the book features witty drawings by New Yorker cartoonist Roz Chast. It is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Daniel Menaker and Roz Chast back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How did you come to collaborate on this project? Had you worked together at The New Yorker? Had you met at The New Yorker?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
Perhaps.
Have it your way.
It's a little of the... We knew of each other. I think we may have said hello in the halls, but we never collaborated directly.
Right.
Roz would report to the art department, and I would be in the fiction department, and the twain didn't meet.
Exactly.
But Roz, I know you've illustrated your own books, but have you illustrated other people's books before this?
Yeah, I have.
How different is it from coming up with a clever cartoon for the latest New Yorker?
Well, it's easier in many ways, also because you're not responsible for the joke in all meanings of that word, responsible. It's fun. It's different, but I like it.
When I saw this book, Daniel, I thought, oh, gee, I've laughed so many times in the past over unconscious misspellings, weird puns that people didn't realize they were making, but I never made up a list of them. And in preparing for this, I started trying to remember some of them, and I couldn't. You've been writing them down?
It's very weird. It is very hard to remember them. I don't know why. But I think the reason that I began doing it is that I had the unenviable job of reading what was called the slush pile at The New Yorker. And the submissions that we got there were often rife with these kinds of mistakes. And at the beginning, I thought, well, how dumb these people are. But after a while, I began to think, wait a minute, they're kind of catchy and there's a certain poetry in them. And that's when I began to write them down.
Do you think that spell check and also autocorrect are making it even more of a problem now? Because before I realized that, I really had to go back and check what I was about to send. Some pretty crazy things had been changed by my phone.
Well, I think that spell check and autocorrect and so on have actually decreased the value of these mistakes because they happen now so often. And in the book, I tried to make sure that these were actually written down consciously by people rather than by Siri or whoever the hell it was. So
there are so many really funny examples in the book. Why did you choose the African Svelte? S-V-E-L-T-E, for the title. I feel like I have to spell out a lot of these things.
It's kind of obscure. The reason is that it's the first one that I actually consciously wrote down. Mm-hmm. And it was in a short story submitted to The New Yorker, the zebras were grazing on the African svelte. And I thought, it was typed, it wasn't auto-corrected, a human being had actually written that, and I thought, how excellent is that? And that's when it started.
So then you decide to call all of these sveltes?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it was such a great idea, but, the past is done. I might have chosen another one.
Roz, how did you choose which of the svelts to illustrate?
It's a good question. I think the ones that sort of suggested an image in my mind, like the self of steam, that was just so perfect.
That was a body of made of steam with a sign in front of it.
Yeah.
First place in the world, I think, or something that.
First place in the world. Yes. Were there any svelts that you wanted to illustrate but didn't have room or just found too hard?
I think that I had agreed to illustrate like 18, and I wound up doing 22 because there were ones that I just really, really wanted to illustrate. The pus jewel.
I didn't want you to illustrate the pus jewel.
Well, some
jewel.
Of them are rather gruesome, like lactose intolerant.
Yes, that's a little strange.
Kind of bad.
It's a little violational. No, I actually looked at the whole list of svelts when Roz agreed to do this, and gave me a bargain, like shopping at a bargain store. I got 22 for the price of 18. Not bad. Yeah. I kind of guessed which ones you would illustrate.
That's so funny.
For the same reasons that you're saying, because they suggested some visual aspect.
Yeah. Well, like the terrorist was wearing a baklava, which for the first 10 times I looked at it, actually made me laugh. Just thinking.
It's the best one.
Yeah, it's great. That's
it's
a great
the best one.
And then, of course, there are the various oils. There's motor oil and olive oil and cholesterol oil.
Cholesterol
oil
is
good.
Cholesterol is very good.
But many of them, I was thinking about this as a radio segment. Part of the problem is that the mistakes are a result of spelling a word as it sounds. So unless people see it and know the correct spelling, they're not going to understand what I'm talking about here.
No, I that's certainly true. And I think that the writing down the way a word sounds is likely to lead to these kinds of mistakes. And that, I think I said at the beginning, I felt very superior. But then I thought, why? That they're just – people are just trying, their best to record what something sounds like. For instance, for all intensive purposes. That is actually becoming an acceptable alternative, according to the Oxford English Dictionary. Some of these mistakes are becoming accepted by dictionaries.
Well, in that case, it does explain something. In others, it just seems like, gee, that's really funny that they spelled it that way. Are there etymological words to describe these kinds of mistakes?
Well, Roz and I were talking about them. Why don't you name some of them?
Sora Mimi, which is that the lyrics?
Sora Mimi?
Yeah, Sora Mimi, and I forget which one.
Song lyrics, perhaps?
Misheard song lyrics, like, excuse me while I kiss this guy, instead of, where I kiss it. But there's this, or eggcorns.
Right.
E-G-G-C-O-R-N-S instead of acorn.
There's a mumpsimus, which most of us have. I believe it's where you start as a child mispronouncing a word, in my case, Valunya for vanilla, and then your family persists for the next 40 years in referring to it.
Or you give your sibling a name that winds up being attached to your sibling, just because you couldn't pronounce it correctly.
And that's a whole category of mistakes.
Yeah. So I love that there's a specific word for all of these things.
A mondegreen.
Mondegreen is a great
Mondegreen is the best.
Yeah, Lady Mondegreen.
Yeah, they have slain the Earl of Moray and laid him on the green, which is an old Scottish ballad, and it was misheard as they have slain the Earl of Moray and Lady Mondegreen. And so now Mondegreen, that's the misheard.
Yes,
the misheard lyric,
I think. Mondegreen, right.
Yeah.
I'm speaking with Daniel Menaker, whose latest book is The African Svelte, Ingenious Misspellings That Make Surprising Sense, with drawings by Roz Chass and a foreword by a poet, Billy Collins. Poets often play with words like this, so he probably appreciated the book. Your illustration for the Svelte End Trails. In it, we see a nervous man and the inside of his stomach showing all of his intestines with a sign that says, "Trail ends 1 mile."
It makes so much sense, though. End trails.
Sure. What else are they?
They're little trails.
The end of the trail of your food.
Yeah. It's a little trail inside of you.
Roz and I actually had, once she did the drawings, we began to talk about whether a little touch might be added here or there. And I, for the most part, they came to me as perfect as the best diamonds you could imagine. But in a couple cases, I made a suggestion. And that sign was one of them, I think.
Yes. Yeah, I think it was.
She was amazingly collaborative. And I'd never worked with Roz Chass before. And I just want to say that the kind of hauteur that auteurs have doesn't apply to you. I don't know about other artists with regard to illustration.
Aren't auteurs filmmakers?
they have auteurs.
But I'm bummed. Okay.
Yeah.
You can add that to the second edition.
I will.
If it's funny, this book had two things that I really liked. And I liked words. Just, I mean, I love word puzzles. I do, you know, crosswords and acrostics and cryptics, and I love all that stuff. I like words, and I like thinking about words, and it was also really funny. Yeah. So it combined these two things that, you know, made it a fun project.
But also some of your cartoons have to do with a play on the word that you put at the top of the cartoon.
Well, I think
good point.
Cartoons, it's a very funny, odd art form because it is this kind of juxtaposition of words and pictures and, you know, whether one is illustrating. It's not an illustration, you know.
Does Bob Mankoff edit your cartoons?
No, generally not. I mean, nobody, that's not how it works. It's really very, you know, it's either yes or no, you know.
Although you had a hard time breaking through, I gather that when Bob Mankoff tells the story of trying to convince the editors to accept somebody's cartoon, not yours, and they just didn't get it, and then he showed them one of your early cartoons that the editors at that time didn't get and now has become a classic.
Yeah. He told me, I think, that it was a certain cartoon. It was the very first one that The New Yorker published, The Little Things, and David... said, I think this
David
person
Remnick.
Is. Yeah, said, I think this person is crazy. And
he was so wrong. This is one of the sanest people I know. Any evidence to the contrary, notwithstanding. So I could have told him that.
In the Svelte Amphibious Pitcher Makes Debut, which is meant to be ambidextrous, you mentioned that amphibious originates from a Greek word of amphibios, which means leading a double life. So the two words are linked in some ways.
I think that's the hope. I hope that's ultimately the point of the more serious aspects of the book, which is that most mistakes are linked to their correct forms in an interesting way, and almost all words are connected to almost all other words. One of the things I found out in writing sort of expositions about these words is that they kind of join at the origin. You find out that they actually have a connected kind of genealogy in a way, or genealogy even. How do you
That's
say
funny.
That word?
I'm not sure.
I wonder about uncharted waters. Instead of uncharted waters, uncharted. Waters can be uncharted.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. There are areas of the ocean that are not governed by laws of the sea. They are literally uncharted. They have no charter to go along with them. And often they're uncharted as well because they are obscure or off somewhere that nobody cares about because they don't have any oil underneath them or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the one becomes an accepted alternative for the other.
Another is toe the line, spelled T-O-W instead of T-O-E. But you can toe a line.
You can toe a line, and you can toe it. In obedience, that is, if you have to pull something along, like a barge or something, it's the same in a way as being obedient to putting, you know, at the beginning of a race, you have to toe the line. It's an obligation, basically.
And there's a very sexy one, please bear with me. The bear spelled B-A-R-E.
That's the nudist credo, I believe. Please bear with me.
Did you find yourself laughing when you found some of these?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It redeemed a great many things that I was not laughing about as I found them. And when Roz joined me, we found that even though we didn't know each other well, I think it's fair to say that we have common sensibilities in a way.
I think so. Words, funny. These
people,
are good things. People,
humans.
Yeah, there's that.
Do you think that people ever misinterpret your cartoons in funny ways? Do you get feedback where people so misunderstood?
Definitely. Oh, my God. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, sometimes it's just like a little thing, but I found a video online where somebody who did not know what the Second Avenue subway was, and he took the cover, and it was this crazy video, I hope he doesn't hear this. But anyway, he interpreted
it. If you're listening, yeah, call in right now.
He interpreted it as this like occult kind of thing, and that these were like the subway stations. Because the cover was why the Second Avenue subway was taking so long. It was from like 2 or 3 years ago. And it started out in this
still
financial
relevant,
district.
Roz.
Yes, I know. They say. But anyway, it started out in downtown Manhattan. And then, of course, it goes out to Jupiter. It goes to New Guinea. It goes back out to Saturn. It goes to, Fiji. And he interpreted all of these things as like signs where like I think the evil spots in the universe where the evil was going to come out. And I had this part where like the path was kind of coiled. And somebody in the comments pointed out that it was three sixes. And then the best part of this video was when the guy said, and I know the artist, and he's deeply into the occult. And it was
he is.
And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. On what plane did that meeting take place?
Can I just say one thing? That when Roz and I got together about this book, I knew she was the right person, although it took some convincing, honestly. But when she referred to her new small apartment in Manhattan as a pomme de terre, I thought,
yes,
this is a match made in heaven. And that was, I don't even know if you knew
was
what
it
the
a
book
match or a
was.
Mash or made in heaven?
A mash, right.
Yeah.
Pomme de terre. And now I can't
exactly
get it out of my mind.
It's a pomme de terre.
That was just accidental on your part?
No.
You were making a joke?
That was making a joke. Please, my father taught French. He would kill me from the grave.
This is what happens when you become successful as a cartoonist, as an artist. By the way, Roz's exhibit, which is now gone at the Museum of the City of New York, was so amazing. But you get, if you have a certain cash inflow, you get to have a pomme de terre.
Yes,
I think.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Maybe just a small pomme.
A small pomme de terre.
But that's all you need.
Daniel, did you write any of the svelts in this collection?
I did. Of course, I'm not remembering what they are. One was noisome, the word that means disgusting or nauseating. And I always spelled it N-O-I-S-E-S-O-M-E, noisome. Mm-hmm. Natural mistake. It's wrong. It's only N-O-I-S-O-M-E. But again, my own svelte made sense because if something is too loud and too insistent, it can be extremely unpleasant. So, yeah. I mean, it's not a great svelte, honestly, but it's in there.
Some of the ones that really got to me, a last stitch effort. Now, that makes sense.
Yes. Total sense. Yes. It makes more sense than the last ditch because, like, how many ditches are you making?
Do you know where that comes from?
No.
Last ditch? Last ditch effort. The last ditch is during a military battle.
Okay.
You fight and fight, and you're retreating till the last ditch.
Last ditch.
So that's very cool.
That's where you get trench mouth.
Last stitch always makes me think of a desperate surgeon.
Yes.
Trying to
yes, sew, the last stitch.
Sew up the skin at the last minute.
I guess it's better than the last itch.
And then that's the 11th one you have here. The 12th is undo stress, U-N-D-O, stress. We want to undo stress.
Yeah, and not only that, but stress can undo you as well.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
That's actually one of the harder ones to write about because I don't know, it just is.
Vast asleep, which I mentioned at the opening.
Vast asleep is nice. Because, sleep can be cosmic.
Yes, you can be. You go into the vastness.
You go into the vastness of, yes.
Sleepiness.
So do you think that you said that some of these, just one more that I like so much.
No, don't stop.
Roman Oakley. Like Irish person's name. Roman O apostrophe C-L-A-Y.
Yeah, Roman Oakley.
Roman Oakley.
Well, you don't know the source of that,
yes,
that makes just as much sense when you're spelling out what you're hearing.
Yeah. And I think that's what some of these really are. Like you try to make the word relate to the other words that
know. No-nothings is another one. N-O-nothings instead of
perfect.
K-N-O-W.
I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, no. And in fact, yeah. But I have to scroll back and ask Roz and Mr. Lopate if they know who the first Irishman is to come out in the spring. Patio furniture.
Oh, man.
That's the same
Ooh.
As Rome.
That's
disgusting, right? Do you think
you realize that that's what kids online will call a dad joke. That's a dad
I'm
joke.
Done.
Yeah.
I'm done. My son is, I hope he's not listening.
He just...
Well, I just thank you so much for all of the laughs in this book. And from now on, I'm going to start keeping lists because I think this is an endless pursuit. This is something you could just keep on, we'll just keep on giving and giving because people will keep on making these kinds of mistakes that wind up being real metaphors.
And poetry, and definitely. I really believe that now. And I thank you for having us, and I thank Roz in particular, who I think may have made the success of this book with her drawings and just brought it out in a visual way that I wish your listeners could see, because I think they love her work, as they always do, except for the guy who thought she was plotting to destroy the universe.
We have put an image on our show page to give people a sense of what we are talking about. You can find it at wnyc.org/Lopate. And my great thanks to Daniel Menaker and Roz Chass for coming by to talk about this book from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, The African Svelte, Ingenious Misspellings That Make Surprising Sense. It's been so much fun.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.